Welcome to Enclave on Air. At the 2025 ESMO Congress, leading oncologists reflected on data expected to redefine practice across breast, genitourinary, and gynecologic malignancies. Paolo Tarantino, MD, PhD, highlighted multiple paradigm-shifting studies across breast cancer subtypes. He pointed to results from the Phase 3 DESTINY-Breast 11 trial, in which neoadjuvant famtrastuzumab deruxtecan plus the taxane trastuzumab and pertuzumab improved pathologic complete response rates and reduced cardiotoxicity versus dose-dense doxorubicin and cyclophosphamide plus THP in patients with early-stage HER2-positive early breast cancer. He also noted findings in the Phase 3 TROPION-Breast-02 and ASCENT-03 trials, which showed datopotamab deruxtecan and sacituzumab govitecan respectively significantly prolonged progression-free survival and metastatic triple-negative breast cancer. Pasi A. Jani, MD, PhD, discussed the Phase 3 OptiTROP-Lung04 trial, evaluating the TROP2-directed antibody-drug conjugate sacituzumab tumor-tecan versus chemotherapy in patients with advanced non-small cell lung cancer. Andrea Necci, MD, and Andrew W. Hahn, MD, discussed key advances in genitourinary cancers. Dr. Necci highlighted the perioperative findings from the Phase 3 KEYNOTE-905 EV-303 trial of enfortumab vedotin plus pembrolizumab in muscle-invasive bladder cancer, and the Phase 3 RC48-C016 study evaluating disitamab vedotin plus toripalimab versus chemotherapy in HER2-expressing locally advanced or metastatic urothelial carcinoma. Dr. Hahn pointed to the Phase 2 OPTIC RCC and Phase 1b/2 KeyMaker U03 studies in renal cell carcinoma, emphasizing the growing role of biomarker-driven therapy selection and the potential for triplet regimens in future frontline management. Dana M. Chase, MD, highlighted several gynecologic oncology trials presented at the meeting, including the Phase 3 KEYNOTE-B96 trial of pembrolizumab plus chemotherapy in recurrent platinum-resistant ovarian cancer, which demonstrated an overall survival benefit in a difficult-to-treat population. She also underscored emerging data for next-generation antibody-drug conjugates targeting Claudin-6, HER2, and folate receptor alpha, which continue to show durable efficacy and improved tolerability in ovarian and endometrial cancers.
This was an impressive ESMO 2025. There were some practice changes for basically every subtype of breast cancer. For HER2-positive disease, for the first time, we saw that T-DXd has a role in the early stage setting, in the curative setting. We saw in the plenary session DESTINY-Breast 11 neoadjuvant setting where T-DXd THP had a very high PCR rate, better than AC-THP with less cardiotoxicity. And I think it will be approved as a neoadjuvant treatment for patients with moderate to high risk disease. In the adjuvant setting, it improved disease-free survival for a very high-risk population, a population with residual disease after neoadjuvant treatment and with node-positive residual disease or inoperable disease. Overall, T-DXd, we knew it worked very well. It works very well both in the metastatic and the early-stage setting. In metastatic breast cancer for triple-negative breast cancer, we now know that both daropotamab deruxtecan and sacituzumab govitecan prolong PFS in the first line compared to chemotherapy. This came from the Phase 3 TROPION-Breast02 and ASCENT-03 trials. Both of them showed significant improvement in PFS. Dato-DXd also showed improved objective response rate and overall survival, although it has less crossover. Overall, I think the message is that TROP2 ADCs have moved to the first line setting. And finally, in HR-positive disease, we have two new combos for second line. We have Evera that showed that giredestrant everolimus prolongs PFS, doubles PFS from 5 to 10 months among compared to an endocrine treatment like AI or fulvestrant everolimus, and so it will become likely a new option, especially for patients with ESR1 positive mutation, which seem to be the patients where really there is a benefit with giredestrant compared to other endocrine treatments. And also Victoria-1 was a phase 3 trial that showed that gedatolisib, when added to fulvestrant, with or without palbociclib, significantly improved PFS compared to fulvestrant alone. Fulvestrant alone in the second line in this trial led to a PFS of only 2 months, whereas the combination, the doublet or triplet, led to 7 or even 9 months of PFS. So overall, I think we're going to move toward using combinations in the second line more and more. Of course, this kind of broadens the treatment algorithm, so adds challenges, and this is why we really need to focus on biomarkers for every disease subtype, and especially for ADCs, for which we really don't have great biomarkers. But overall, I feel this raises optimism, positivity. We really feel we are on a wave of new drug development where new drugs become available, show benefits, both ADCs, novel SERDs, novel targeted treatments, and I'm really looking forward to seeing some of these drugs approved and improving outcomes for our patients.
I think we have two major information coming from this meeting. The EV Pembro story is expanding in a non-metastatic setting in organ-confined disease. So the future of EV Pembro combination will be to shift our consideration that we are very used to make in the frontline metastatic setting earlier in time in a muscle invasive disease setting. This will have a radical impact on the way we conceive sequential therapies, on the way we treat metastatic patients, on the way we conceive in general the rescue treatment who are being already exposed to a kind of immune therapy or immune ADC combination. The other study that is providing compelling results is the Chinese study putting the focus on an anti-HER2 antibody, this mavirotin, in combination with the checkpoint inhibitor, toripalimab. Another presidential session, LBA7, in a Chinese study comparing DVT combination to its standard chemotherapy. Actually, the magnitude of effect of DVT, the effect size in terms of PFS and OS was quite similar to EV Pembro combination. We will struggle tomorrow in identifying the patient population who are best suited for an anti-HER2 strategy as compared to EV Pembro strategy. So in the future, selecting patient selection based on clinical or biomarker characteristics and envisioning a sequence of therapy with multiple ADC IO combination coming to the ground of standard therapies will become very complicated and will become the next challenge for the next clinical trials.
I think first you have our data that we've already talked about, where I think Lynn Cabo, our study, is very relevant to the decisions being made in clinic today when patients' cancer is worsening on immunotherapy. There were a few other really important studies presented. One is, and they're more kind of asking questions that are more future-facing, not impacting practice today. The OPTIC-RCC study presented by the team at Vanderbilt answered a really important and provocative question, which is, can we start using biomarkers to choose the right patient for the right first-line treatment? We have all these four different options to choose from. We all make clinical inferences on who's the best patient for which treatment regimen. But this was a time looking where the OPTIC-RCC study looked at gene expression, and they saw that patients who had high angiogenic scores seem to benefit more from nivolumab plus cabozantinib. That's not ready for prime time. It's not going into clinic next week, but it is something that we are all going to start thinking about moving forward in the future. And then the final one was briefly alluded to was the KeyMaker study presented by Dr. Suarez that showed provocative data, definitely are making us all look forward to LITESPARK 12, where they tried to combine belzutifan in different combinations for first-line treatment of metastatic clear cell RCC. These are triplets, the triplet's not been successful so far, but KeyMaker showed that the combination of pembrolizumab plus belzutifan plus lenvatinib had good, encouraging anti-tumor activity. So it really just sets us up for LITESPARK 12. That's the phase 3 trial. We're not saying it's ready for prime time yet, ready to be used in clinic, but something for people to think about.
So I think the most anticipated presentation and abstract to be presented was the Keynote B96 data. I think there was a lot of hype leading up to the meeting that this could be the one and only ovarian cancer trial that's going to show or going to prove a role of immunotherapy in ovarian cancer in general. And so I think that was sort of what we were most excited to see. Now, the results, I think, potentially have implications. I've sort of heard it both ways. I mean, some people say, oh, this is great, you know, 18-month overall survival in a recurrent platinum-resistant ovarian cancer patient. That's like groundbreaking and new for this patient population. And then I've heard other people say, you know, these are were potentially lower risk patients, and the difference in median PFS and median overall survival is not clinically that meaningful. So I've sort of heard it go both ways. I mean, I think this is maybe the only immunotherapy in ovarian cancer trial that will have potentially bigger clinical implications just because of the overall survival benefit and this sort of high unmet need patient population. So potentially there is a role, and I really do think people are going to start using this regimen. First of all, there were several posters of ADCs in gynecologic cancers. For example, there was a poster regarding the Claudin-6 antibody-drug conjugate, using that in a platinum-resistant ovarian cancer patient population. And this is potentially an agent that we're going to see more clinical trials in, and hopefully get an indication to use it. The Claudin-6 antibody-drug conjugate, like some of the newer ADCs that we're seeing in results in clinical trials, has maybe a more favored AE profile or side effect profile compared to the two ADCs on the market that we, or the three ADCs in the market that we can use in patients already that are FDA approved, like T-DXd, tisotumab vedotin, and mirvetuximab. Potentially, this Claudin-6 ADC has a superior, maybe superior side effect profile. And of course, also this ADC has an MMAE payload, which is not the topoisomerase inhibitor, one inhibitor payload that we're seeing in a lot of the ADCs. So this is a ADC that has a different payload compared to a lot of the ones that we're seeing presented. There was also a poster of a biparatopic anti-HER2 antibody-drug conjugate in also the platinum-resistant ovarian cancer patient population. And this is an ADC that's biparatopic, which is novel, and that it has a topoisomerase 1 inhibitor payload. Again, has encouraging efficacy and maybe manageable toxicity in the PROC patient population. There were a lot of posters and presentations with various ADCs. Like I mentioned, the Claudin-6 ADC, which was presented in a poster. Then there was also a poster of the Rina-S ADC. So this is a folate receptor alpha targeting ADC, and the data was presented in recurrent endometrial cancer patients. Again, this is like we've seen with many of these ADC presentations. Many of them have topoisomerase 1 inhibitor payload. Many of them have impressive response rates, like roughly around 50%, with impressive duration of responses. And then perhaps most notably is sort of an improved side effect profile, which also a lot of people are happy to see, meaning low ILD rates, so low rates of interstitial lung disease, and obviously less alopecia, less neuropathy, and pretty tolerable side effects in terms of GI and fatigue. Some of these ABCs have bone marrow toxicity, which hopefully can be mitigated with growth factor support. There were, I think, two oral presentations, the AstraZeneca folate receptor alpha targeting ADC, again, has a topoisomerase 1 inhibitor payload, again, shows promising efficacy data and good, you know, relatively tolerable and manageable side effect profile. And then what was interesting to see is this NaPi2b targeted ADC. Previously, there was some development using an ADC that targeted the same receptor, but that was withdrawn. Those studies were withdrawn due to toxicity concerns. And so to see another one being developed is interesting and potentially, again, with a good side effect profile or a tolerable side effect profile and a good efficacy comparable to the other ADCs that we're seeing be presented.
Lung cancer is ADCs, as I said, but there will be also nice presentation in cervical cancer, looking at a chemo-free regimen, for instance, in the frontline setting for cervical cancer. And this is quite interesting, of course. We will have also some nice presentation of endometrial cancer. Probably they will not be practice changing, but again, they will add knowledge to our armamentarium and will help to better define the best treatment for our patients with gynecological cancer.
That's all we have for today. Thank you for listening to this episode of Enclave on Air. Check back throughout the week for exclusive interviews with leading experts in the oncology field. For more updates on oncology, be sure to visit www.enclave.com and sign up for our e-newsletters. Enclave is also on social media. On X and Blue Sky, follow us at Enclave. On Facebook, give us a like at Enclave and follow our Enclave page on LinkedIn. If you liked today's episode of Enclave on Air, please consider subscribing to our podcast on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and many of your other favorite podcast platforms so you get a notification every time a new episode is posted. And while you're there, please take a moment to rate us. Thanks again for listening to this episode of Enclave on Air.